The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello and welcome to The Promised Land, a show all about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min podcast network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by football journalist and United season ticket holder Rob Blanchett. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts on Apple, Google, Spotify, etc. And now you can watch us twice a week on Tuesdays and Fridays. So head over to our YouTube channel, hit the like button, subscribe, join the community. And the link should be in the description of this episode if you're listening on an audio platform as well. Rob, we have a new class of Youth Cup winners. The class of 22, as they're being dubbed, 30 years on. That's the right mass, yeah. 30 years on from the class of 92. Let's hope they can emulate that lot and bring United back to glory. But yeah, nice. In a season of awful lows and not too many highs, it's a nice story.
Well, it's silverware, isn't it? So this is it for Man United this year. Us as fans, that we've won the Youth Cup. But I think it's a great start in terms of a new rebuild at Manchester United. So this is where we are as a football club. And it's just a pivot, a place to kind of go in a more positive direction. I think the lads did really, really well on the night. I think really Forest were probably the better team overall. They seemed to handle the occasion a little bit more and they worked really, really hard. I think United found it hard to kind of get their game going. But in the clutch, late in the game, Garnacho came through. United in front of a huge audience at Old Trafford, incredible crowd. I think it touched on 70,000 for a youth match, which is phenomenal. They got their moment of glory and hopefully they'll take that with them, put it in their pockets and go on and use that in future years.
Yes, indeed. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. On today's show, we'll also talk about Ajax and Erik ten Hag, who's had a few things to say on United's or his decision to take the United role. We'll get into that. We'll talk about who he's targeting or which positions he's targeting to strengthen in the summer. We'll talk Frankie de Jong as well, because that is the hot name in the transfer scene for United at the moment. And we'll also talk about Ten Hag seemingly getting the assistant manager staffing that he wanted, despite some resistance from those within United about one Steve McLaren, who's been there before. But yes, you can follow us on Twitter too, @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B. And at Promise and MU for the show as well. But let's cycle back to the Youth Cup, Rob, and give it the attention it requires. As you say, Forest, perhaps the better team. United, a bit fortunate with the penalty that they had for the second goal as well, because it was did look outside the box, to be fair. But, you know, you have to take those opportunities when you get them. Great news for the lads and the star of, well, the man who grabbed all the headlines, Alejandro Garnacho, with the two goals. Can we expect to see him breaking into the team under Ten Hag, do you think? And is there anybody else that you think can make the step up within the next few months?
It's all about pre-season, isn't it now? So, you know, this is the kind of little spell of a few weeks where the new coach will get to see his new players. And look, Garnacho, we can see his quality. We know what he can do. We know what the upside is. We know what the potential is. but it's about whether he can play a Ten Hag system. I still think maybe there's a question around his overall work rate, but he's young, isn't he? So you can coach these things into young players. He's got talent. You can see why Argentina and Spain are both fighting over him and want him to be there as a senior for them. It looks like, obviously, he's chosen Argentina. Can he make the step immediately? I'm not sure. I think that's something that you can say wait and see on. But United have got a few youth players now that I think makes the exit of some of the more experienced pros at United just something a little bit more easy to stomach. You know, if you're going to lose 10 or 15 or 10 or 12, shall I say, and you're going to bring in maybe 5 or 6, you will need 2 or 3 to come through the youth ranks.
Yes, indeed. It's a nice way to sign off the season for the youth team. And it's a nice way to kind of end the season for United as well, as I say, in a season of god-awful lows and this kind of thing. But we'll see. I mean, Erik ten Hag at Ajax one of the key things at Ajax is to bring through youth players who they come through that system. They've been doing it for decades, for years and years. And United have a similar tradition in that sense. So hopefully there can be something that goes hand in hand there. Maybe it won't be straight away, but there's a bit of talent in there. So fingers crossed we start to see some of them develop into first team players in the future. There was also another trophy, which some United fans have claimed this week as well, with Erik ten Hag and Ajax winning the Eredivisie title finally. It's been a few weeks coming. We've known that they're going to win it, really. But they did it in style on Wednesday night. Ten Hag kind of got the old throwing up in the... All the players around him throwing them up in the air and this kind of thing. And that was nice to see as well. A nice sign-off for Erik ten Hag before he leaves for United.
Yeah, I think it was great, obviously, that they won the title. I know I jokingly claimed that championship for Manchester United as he's now our coach and not theirs. But of course, you can't joke on the internet. People are not quite sure 100% whether you're telling the truth or not with that kind of stuff. But I think it was a great way for him to exit the club in terms of... It could have gone wrong, couldn't it, the last few weeks? So as soon as it was announced that he was coming to United, there might have been a drop-off. We might have seen that his leadership unraveled at Ajax and that the players just kind of went, no thanks. Have we seen that at Manchester United before? Yes, we have. So that could have happened and it didn't. And I think that's a credit to him. There's also a video going around at Ajax released yesterday just of Ten Hag's last moments in that match before they won the title. And it just follows him. It's really, really interesting because it just shows how he runs that team and how much of a connection he has with his players. And do you know who it reminded me of, Scott? Reminded me of Pep Guardiola. Just in terms of the closeness, the togetherness, but at the same time, coaching. Actually being there and telling players what to do, when to do it. There's a little shot of him with an iPad on the side with the subs. So the game's going on and he's going, da-da-da-da. So when you're... And I like that because it means that there's some control and some thought process there. So well done to Erik ten Hag, obviously winning that Dutch title once again. And he says that when he comes to Manchester United, he wants to bring a winner's mentality. The right words. This is what we need to hear at Man United. We need people come to this football club that understand that winning is important.
Yes, indeed. Ten Hag has wasted little time since. He's already been kind of working behind the scenes on what happens at United from next season, because they do need to start addressing how bad this season has been pretty soon. And they've already been working on it. And he's opened up a little bit in an interview with a Dutch media outlet talking about the United job. We'll get into the meeting that he held on Thursday in a little bit as well. But he said, despite United being a beautiful club, I would never just start. I wanted to create a good working conditions first, so every detail had to be taken care of. I know United went through a very precise procedure as well. They'd done scouting analyses, data, interviews with people who worked with me, and then we held multiple interviews between us as well. They didn't rush into things and neither did I. It felt like a difficult but fantastic challenge that United is something to build and something to win. It's such a big name in the history of football as well. He's also talked about the history, Sir Alex Ferguson, Munich, the finances and a bunch of different things as well in what he thinks, some of the stuff that he thinks is there for him to kind of build on and to move forward with. So it's good to hear him speaking quite frankly and outright about A, how drawn he is to the project, and B, how much detail had actually gone into this before it happening.
Well, this is what we've been talking about, isn't it? I think over the last few weeks, there's been this resistance from Ten Hag and certain parts of Manchester United say not a lot is happening. You know, we're going to wait and see. Ralph Rangnick's been, I think, the main conductor of that, saying, no, we're just getting on with the season. We've not talked about next year and new players and all of that. That is rubbish. That has already been talked about. It's been talked about since day one, really. And you have to, because this is the only way you can utilise your time to create the best conditions. So I really like those quotes, just obviously their post Ajax winning the title. Manchester United, of course, have met with Erik ten Hag and his potential assistants in Amsterdam on Thursday. That was a very fruitful, successful meeting. They've gone through targets, they've gone through structure. And now that is actually about just applying some of that science. So the ideas, I think ten Hag had said in his contract negotiations about the conditions he demanded, this is now the next step in that. So Erik ten Hag, we're here, is not going to kind of take a day off. You know, he might have a little break once the season's over, but he's effectively at work. He's running Manchester United already, and his assistants will be in place in potentially, even when we're doing this podcast, you might even hear in the next few hours that that's confirmed by the football club.
I'm personally waiting to see a picture of Erik ten Hag and Ralph Rangnick talking. I'm hoping that they kind of put that out there. I don't know if they will. I'm not sure how many conversations he's had with Ralph yet, but Ralph has said in the last few weeks that he was waiting until the season was over to have that chat with him. But obviously, things have been cracking on quite quickly. Wasted no time at all. You know, you win a league title on the Wednesday night, and then 9 a.m. on Thursday, and this was at Ten Hag's order, by the way, as well.
As we've
learned, this was Ten Hag gathering John Murta, Steve McLaren, Mitchell van der Haag, or van der Gaag, I think my pronunciation might be wrong there. But those assistants have yet to be confirmed. But now that they've been in this meeting, it's been verified that they are there. It's just a matter of time until they are confirmed, isn't it? And van der Gaag obviously has made it clear that he wants to leave Ajax and follow Ten Hag to United.
Yeah.
Steve McLaren, Rob, let's talk about Steve McLaren, because obviously we know his history with United. We know his history with Ten Hag. They've worked together before. I think Ten Hag sees McLaren as the one who can relate the history, you know, in a sense, to Ten Hag, so they can move forward. But, you know, keep all that in mind as they do move forward. And we'll talk about some kind of feedback that Steve McLaren has given on the squad a little bit later. But what's your reaction to Steve McLaren coming back?
I'm not surprised at all. Like when Ten Hag was first mentioned a number of months ago, a lot of people said, oh, well, you know, there is obviously the Steve McLaren link there, you know, in terms of English football, worked together in Dutch football. Obviously, Steve McLaren went to Twente and won the Eredivisie as the manager there. So I think as English football fans and journalists, we tend to forget McLaren's reputation abroad and with other people. And we see him as this figure of fun because of what happened with England, and people
and
remember him doing
well.
Dutch accents and having an umbrella on the touchline when it's pouring down rain in England and about to lose his job. So people remember those snapshots. But the truth is that when he came to Manchester United and he was part of that mini rebuild before the treble, so Dwight York, Jaap Stam, Arsenal were the best team going. How were United going to overturn that? One of the big things that Sir Alex did was to go and get this guy, Steve McLaren. Obviously, he'd been working at Derby County. So he had a big influence on the change of Man United behind the scenes in that period. And United went on, obviously, a very big run there of success once again. So I'm not saying that him coming back will reboot any of those things, but Ten Hag certainly sees him as a link between success of knowing how to win the Premier League and win big trophies, and the coaching dynamic. And Manchester United's coaching dynamic I'd say since Van Gaal has not been great. So Van Gaal came in, made lots of technical changes very early on, but 2 years of mediocre success, winning the FA Cup, out the door, in comes Mourinho. That needs to be rebooted. And I think that's one thing Ten Hag's identified immediately. And this is where Steve McClaren will play that part. As you said there, he'll have his assistant with him from Ajax. So they'll do a lot of that managerial stuff. But then I think you'll have someone on the training pitch with them that can communicate with English players, that understand the mentality and knows what's needed. And it's about a team effort, isn't it? To actually have a team of coaches that can approach the problems.
United have, in the recent past, especially under Ole Solskjaer, had it levelled of them, jobs for the boys. Is there a distinction between that and this?
Look, there is a distinction because it depends why you give someone a job. So most managers will give someone they know the job. That's just the way it goes. I've worked with so-and-so before in the past. They were good. They fit my application of what I want to do. And that's how we're going to go forward. So, you know, I said on Twitter before and a few weeks ago that the whole Steve McClaren thing will be definitely met with deaf ears with some Man United fans. They'll be thinking about this and going, what, the guy who is a bit of a joke and couldn't really do it in League One in recent times. You know what I mean? That's how they'll look at Steve McClaren, but it's not how the manager looks at him. And I think that's what's important. So I look at Steve McClaren as a good appointment because I do think he can bridge some of those gaps. It's not just like a new manager coming in and doing what he does. It's what Brian Kidd did for Pep Guardiola. You know, there's this kind of marriage there between styles and function and philosophy, but then applying it into a real world football setup. So I'm fine with McClaren, you know, coming in to do the coaching with him because it's not about power, is it? It's about helping. And he's still got this stellar reputation as a coach. You speak to people, especially players who have worked with him, and players always go, Steve McClaren knows what he knows on a football pitch, on a training pitch. He's really, really good.
You mentioned power there. I did want to actually bring that point up because, as we mentioned earlier in the show, that the club, those within the club, or there's been some resistance to actually appointing him within the club is what we've learned. Probably because of the reasons that you just listed about the fan concerns as well. You know, his reputation damage that he's had in more recent years, perhaps with other jobs that he's had, with the reputation, with Wally with a brolly, with the Dutch accent and all this kind of stuff. Is it a good look? But I think if United had resisted this appointment, that's awful, isn't it? It'd be a really bad sign very early on that Ten Hag's pushed for something and he's not got it.
Ten Hag wouldn't be here then.
Yeah.
That would be it. This was the whole point of the contract negotiations being as in-depth as they were, because normally it would be an agent discussing fees and you would talk about, long-term aspects of contracts, commitments, goals, ambitions, all the normal stuff. But Ten Hag did go to the table to Manchester United and said, if I don't get all of these things, not coming. Got other offers, got other stuff to do. Quite like Ajax still could sign a new deal here. So, you know, you need to give me everything I want. And that's what we've got. Ten Hag was promised the world. I do like also his latest comments where he talks about finances. Because again, managers generally don't talk about that. And he said that the financial conditions are in place. And I thought, interesting. So again, it's not something that managers normally go like. You remember Conte went to Tottenham and went, I ain't got a clue about transfers. Like, you know, don't ask me. I haven't got a clue about how much money's available. That's not why I've come here. And managers generally play that line now in general. But he's come and he said, no, the condition's there because he's made certain demands. And he said he needs to revamp this team in his own image. So this is why I think the Steve McClaren appointment is important, because it's his guy. It can't be Michael Carrick 2.0. It can't be McKenna 2.0. It can't be jobs for the boys. It has to be jobs for the right boys.
Nice distinction there. So I did want to mention there as well that in terms of Ten Hag getting what he wants, I mean, I think pretty much every British media put this out about the meeting happening yesterday. As part of our report on nightmare.com, it's kind of confirmed to us that Ten Hag will have a big say, and we've been reporting this for a while, he'll have the final say. Let's put it as the final say on who stays and who leaves. Obviously, it'll be out of his control with the six players that are out of contract. So if he'd like to keep Paul Pogba, you know, there's suggestions today that he's agreed a deal with PSG. Nothing verified there yet, but it doesn't look like Paul Pogba will stay. But it's important that Ten Hag has been given these assurances. And I think that's something we've also put in our report, you can check it out on 90min.com as well, is that Steve McLaren is a big backer of Marcus Rashford, but at the same time, Ten Hag will have the final decision on whether Rashford stays or is put up for sale as well. So that's very important too, isn't it? And it'll allow United to crack on with Ten Hag at the helm of it all.
Yeah, and I think also the interesting thing about Steve McLaren and the players there is that he doesn't have that connection overall with the current squad. So we're talking about Steve McLaren initially being at Man United in the late 90s. You know, it's a long time ago. It's under a different regime. You know, it's different dynasty.
Wasn't that long either, was it?
It wasn't that long because he immediately was lauded. You know, he was given the credit that he deserved for being part of that treble success. So he immediately became this person that everyone wanted to be their next manager. You know, and he was a big, big figure at that time. It's easy 20 years on to kind of forget a lot of the good stuff and just remember the tabloid rubbish. So I think, like you just said there with Marcus Rashford, it is important that he has a relationship with some of these English players because it means he can get inside their head. There's going to be a lot of psychology going on here, Scott. And Steve McLaren is going to ask the first question to these boys. What's been going wrong? Tell us, why has your form gone from here, you know, kind of getting better as a player and then gone that way? You know, was it the management? Was it your coaching? Is something else going on at the football club that we don't know about? And this is why I talk about power and control, because the new manager and his team are going to have that power and control. And I think the good thing is that Manchester United, in the first instance, Richard Arnold, is seeding that. They're saying, yes, this is your club now. This is your team. You decide. You just said they're about the six players out of contract. Obviously, negotiations have been going on with those players for time anyway, but they're going. You said that Paul Pogba, probably going to PSG. I think that's almost as done deal as possible. But if he decides with Erik ten Hag that they want to get together and do something at Man United next year, Erik ten Hag has the power to say, I want this player, get the deal done. So that's kind of, again, what Jurgen Klopp does at Liverpool. You know, it's what Pep Guardiola does, but it's all part of a wider structure, isn't it? It's about having a robust football management structure at the top tier to be able to make core decisions that help you win.
Yeah, on Jurgen Klopp as well, I think, obviously, Ranić spoke last week. Was it last week?
Yeah.
Wow, time has gone very fast. Seems like ages ago. But they'd identified Luis Diaz at Liverpool as being the one to get. Yeah. And then when Tottenham made their move in January, Liverpool were initially going to do it in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tottenham started making moves for him, Liverpool pulled the trigger because we can't miss out on this guy.
And that's what Man United used to do all the time. You know, Wayne Rooney was that. Rooney at Everton, scouted since he was like 10 years old. United knew everything about him. Fergie had spoken to him as a little kid and was like, we'd like you to come to the club one day. Newcastle made a huge bid for him to go from leave from Everton. Everton were going to accept that bid. And Man United went, no, we need to get in here. And within 10 minutes, the deal was done. You know, so they brought him to the football club. And you have to be aggressive like that and understand the marketplace. So as you said, Diaz now might be the difference between Liverpool winning the Champions League and even the Premier League and winning nothing. So that's how you have to look at it. You have to always try and bring in players that can affect your potential winning. And I just like the first few kind of smidgen bits of Ten Hag. He's saying the right stuff and United are giving him the initial power. But of course, the next bit of now will be, who are the new players?
Yes, indeed. Lovely segue, Rob. It's important that Ten Hag sticks to his guns. And it does look like he's doing that as well. He's putting his foot down, making sure that he gets everything that he wants at United. And he's talked about this multiple times as well. If I didn't get what I wanted, if I didn't get this, if I didn't get that, I wouldn't have come. Simple as that, really, because it's not like he wouldn't have had other options as managers jump around Europe over the next couple of years. But yeah, we talked about the players that are coming in, and we'll spend the rest of the show speaking about which potential arrivals we could see at United. Let's do the positions that have been identified first. It's been pretty much confirmed from a few different places that two central midfielders, one centre-half and a versatile forward are on the agenda, on the wanted list. There's varying kind of numbers about a budget, although, you know, budgets are never, like, they're fluid, they're flexible. I think it's quite important, though, to point out that sales of players who are currently there who consider deadwood are quite important to offload, and that whatever fees can be kind of retained for them or brought in for them can also be reinvested. You think of the likes of Eric Bailly, Phil Jones, and Andreas Pereira. I don't know how much you get in for them players, you know, but you think Eric Bailly, you could get a few mil in just to put towards another player.
Yeah.
And so fullback, I think we talked about fullback being a position needing to strengthen as well. And that, I think that's also on the agenda, but not quite as high up the list as these other four positions. So are they the right positions that United should target?
Yeah, totally. If I was writing a list, that's the list, 100%. I think we now can start thinking more progressively about what a Ten Hag team will look like and what does it actually do. So I think a lot of United fans are falling into this trap that he's going to definitely play 4-3-3 out the gate. He hasn't played 4-3-3 for a long time. He plays 4-2-3-1. That's his go-to system. And actually, when you go back over time and with the success he had before Ajax and around that period, he actually likes a 4-4-2 diamond as well. So there are players, obviously, who fit both of those systems. You can move and match and find players to do stuff. But now it's about what will this team look like. I think there you look at two midfielders. I think this is a core part of maybe the failure at United in the last 5 years, let's say, is that there's always been midfield issues and it's always been Paul Pogba plus something. And it's the plus something that I've identified certainly has been the issue. You know, what do you put with Paul Pogba? Well, now you're at a stage where you're probably going to lose Paul Pogba completely. So you're going to have to revamp. So that's why I think the two midfielder side of it is going to be very prominent in this transfer window.
Yes, indeed. We've talked on various shows in the recent past about players in these positions that could be targeted. I think the names that come to mind for me here, Frankie de Jong, we'll talk about him at more at length in a second or in a few minutes' time. Konrad Leim has been looked at by Ralf Rangnick's recommendation, although I think Bayern Munich won him as well, so it might be a difficult one to pull off. De Jong also would like Champions League football if he leaves Barcelona, which is not completely certain from what we understand as well at the moment. So that would be difficult to pull off. We've talked about Declan Rice, very expensive. Centre-halves, Pau Torres, we've identified him and spoke about him in the last few weeks. And up front, Darwin Núñez as well, kind of fits that. He could play up front, has played on the left side as well. So maybe does fit that flexible, versatile forward profile. But are there any other players that you think, are these the right kind of players to be looking at? Or do United need to find a bargain in here somewhere?
You see, I try and buck against the trend on this because I've heard it a lot, is that Man United needs to go shopping in, you know, bargain basements because that's where you get real talent. I think you have to just have a balance, Scott. You have to have a balance of scouting that allows you to look even at the lower leagues, maybe less fashionable clubs in Europe, and find talent. But you can't stop spending money. Like, Manchester City haven't stopped spending money to become successful. Liverpool went and bought Diaz aggressively with a financial package. You can't just say, oh yeah, the next two midfielders, they can cost 8 million each. Because I've actually heard this a lot from United fans. We shouldn't be looking at Declan Rice because that blows the budget. Well, you're talking about budget, say, you know, the latest figure is 120 million cash to use. And again, I've heard conflicting information on that. That, man, it's not really about that. It's about the squad and the wage bill. So for Ten Hag, that's really one of the things that was discussed in that Thursday meeting, was about how to balance those books and who do you go for and who are the targets and which agents have already bit. Which agents have said, yes, we'd like to chat with you because our player might be interested in joining your football club. So Frankie de Jong, the main part of that, of course, is that Barcelona are going to have to initiate some kind of sale, not just on that player, but maybe on others, and they've got to balance their books. He would be a great fit for Ten Hag. He'd be a great fit for Manchester United, but are Manchester United a great fit for him? If he wants to win the Champions League next year or the year after, does he really fancy a rebuild in Manchester in a really tough league like the Premier League, where he'd have to maybe modify some of his style of his game? So there's lots of players you can go for, Scott, and we'll talk about all of them in the coming weeks. But it's important that United fans don't get obsessed with, oh, you can't buy stars, you can't buy players with big values or big contracts, because that's just not modern football.
Yeah, that was going to be a question I was going to ask you on De Jong. We'll shift to him in a second. Maybe we'll shift to him now. Maybe cycle back to the other positions in a little while. But obviously, this has come out. We've seen the links in the last... I know that we had a story on Frankie de Jong about 10 days, 2 weeks ago that we held off on. But it's not like the links have come out of nowhere. But I think that the big thing was the noises from Barcelona in the last few days, a couple of days ago now, was 95% done, which is a stretch, probably. And things have come back more to the center since then. But that doesn't mean that there's nothing to this at all. I think that we both know ourselves that there's interest from United side that United would like to do a deal. And we know that Barcelona are in a difficult financial position. They've got Gavi and Pedri. Gavi's going to sign a new contract soon. So they're going to be fixtures in Xavi's midfield. Mm-hmm. Sergio Busquets occupies the role in front of the defence at the moment and probably will still. And they're signing Frank Kessie from AC Milan on a free transfer as well. So it makes sense for Barcelona to sell him if they're looking to raise money.
And this is the whole balance of the books exercise. What we think is the case is it is 95% true that Manchester United picked the phone up and banged on their door and said, we'd like this player. So that's the first thing, isn't it? That's what you've got to do. You've got to approach clubs. And we're hearing quite extensively how Manchester United are orchestrating this now with a number of players and football clubs that they're asking about availability for players on their list. The list, of course, is made by Ten Hag. So that's what's important here, is that it's the manager executing the structure of the game plan. So just talking there about De Jong, everyone knows how good he is. Everyone understands the upside of him. But it's now about finding those two midfield pieces, I think, for Man United that can really propel you quickly. Because as much as we all admit that this build will take some time, and we're giving him time, 2, 3, 4 years potentially, multiple transfer windows, the truth is that Richard Arnold wants things to happen yesterday. And that means that sometimes you've got to go and get a better set of play. That's why we talk about Declan Rice a lot. Because not that West Ham want to sell Declan Rice. And it's not that Man United have chucked £100 million on the table for him. It's just that if that's the player you want, because you identify him as the one who takes you to the next level, you do everything to get him. As it stands, Declan Rice isn't coming to Man United. West Ham are not going to sell. Declan Rice, I'm not 100% sure, is sold on Man United. But of course, if you wanted him, you'd have to have that conversation with his representatives and then try and get him to get out of the football club, because I think he's quite happy at West Ham. And it's a case of trying to put something in front of him that would allow him the conditions to move. A little bit like Grealish and Villa, in the sense that Grealish loved Villa, was happy there. Bang, bang, bang on the door. 2 days later, he's gone. It's like literally like that, you know, because I think when you see the opportunity, players are quite quite keen to further their career.
Yes, indeed. Another question for you on De Jong. We've gone through the expense section, but like, does he fit into this? I know my own feelings on this, but I'm just asking for the sake of the podcast and for the sake of the conversation. Is his profile of, you know, his stature and all this kind of stuff, does that kind of fit in with the past strategy of United going for these like box office? Perhaps not box office is the wrong word, but that kind of like elite level player. Is that the wrong approach? Like with a 60 million fee or something like that, that could obviously bring pressure on top of him. But for me, like he's not quite damaged goods, but he is a little bit. He's not gone right at Barcelona. So he's kind of hit a lower ebb. And there's plenty of room for him to grow, isn't it?
Well, is he just a blown up version of Donny van der Beek? You know, so this is a kind of like, it's a difficult one, because I wouldn't say the jury is out on him, but you just said there about strategy. No, this is not the kind of sign that Manchester United have kind of looked at in the last few years, because it's not the glamour signing that they want. But what's the difference, Scott? The difference is a different person making these decisions now. Yeah. You know, it has been an Ed Woodward show, the pantomime that he ran. And of course, for him, it was more about being surrounded by the accountants and saying, you know, oh, we're going to spend 50 million on Ronaldo, 2-year contract. What do we get back for that? So it's not a case of just bring him in, let him score goals and be done. It's about what can this player do for us? It's about signing players that win you stuff, Scott, that help you win. And I don't think that De Jong is an essential signing. I really don't. I think, you know, like you said there again, no smoke without fire. And there's definitely something going along in terms of Manchester United have inquired about him. So that's the first part of this. Barcelona The second part being that they need to sell, because I think the Spanish clubs are all having a little bit of trouble in terms of balancing their books. But they don't have to get rid of De Jong. And De Jong himself has said very, very recently how happy he is in Catalonia. So you have to try and balance all those facts and find a way around it. I think he'd be a really, really good signer for Manchester United, a strong statement of intent about how you want to rebuild your midfield. But also, United fans are going to have to understand that this team next year might look very, very different to the one you've watched for several years in terms of its approach and its talent.
I think everyone's crying out for that, though, aren't they?
They want it, but people have been starved of it, Scott. So because it feels like it's never happened, all the success United have had over 30 or 40 years feels like way in the past now, doesn't it? You know, we kind of live off it because United social media will put a goal out from 12 years ago today, and this happened, and it's like, who cares? You know, the past is a past. Great. It was a fantastic time. But now it's about the present and the future. That's why you go for a Ten Hag. Ten Hag gives you a cute strategy of how to build a football team. And it's going to look very, very different to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's United, and very different, I think, to, you think, the two statesmen of Van Gaal and Mourinho and how they were brought into the football club. I think this is a completely fresh page for Manchester United.
Question related to the transfers. Do you think if United act quickly, then it will be a signifier of change actually happening? Because we know that United have, in the past, dragged transfers out. Like Harry Maguire, oh my God, was dragged out for ages. And they ended up paying what Leicester wanted anyway.
Yeah.
Jadon Sancho was dragged out for 2 years. And United was strung along until they ended up getting him. Does it seem to me now, or does it seem to you now, that like, United have identified what they want and they're going to try and go and get them before pre-season starts? And if they end up getting their targets in August, late August, does that change your outlook on how things are going to go?
I think
things have changed.
I think there will be a change in the sense that, you know, if you take those transfers that you just mentioned, and I think Sancho being the most pertinent one, Sancho for that 12-month period was all about price. And Man United felt they won that battle. So they didn't do what's happened with City and Haaland. You know, there's a contract there in terms for Haaland with a negotiated clause. So that helps you and you can go and do that business. But Dortmund wanted a lot of money, overvalue priced for Sancho. And Man United dug their heels in for 12 months and said no. And what did they do? They allowed Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to schmooze with the player and basically say, you're coming, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. So United did that. But Scott, you can't wait 12 months, 24 months to become successful. You've got to do it today and yesterday. You've got to find a way. So I think we will see a move away from that kind of strategy, because that was the Ed Woodward strategy. And Ed has gone. Thank God. You know, I think that's the way it is. You know, this is way. So it's a different way. So Ten Hag's not going to say, yeah, I'll hang about for a year for you, mate. No way. It's not happening. He's going to be saying to Frankie de Jong, you come now or it's done. I move on. I go find someone else, you know, because there's plenty of good players out there. And again, I think United fans become obsessed with that, with a player, and then it becomes the new cycle. And then they read about it nonstop. And eventually they get bored of it and go, oh, why is it like this? Well, that's because Man United are not very good at doing their business in the past. Like Luis Diaz at Liverpool, really good example. We need that player. We need him now. We're going to sign him. He's going to be in our team next week. So I think we'll see now United with the Haaland signing at Manchester City being announced so aggressively as they have done it. I think United will go, we're going to do a bit of that. We're going to just announce players that we've got in our pocket already, because they'll want to be able to control some of that news cycle and show that they're backing their manager.
They'll also need to get players in pretty early because of the adjustment time that it'll require for Ten Hag to get his message across. There's been reports this week that he wants to bring them back 2 weeks early for pre-season he fears that they're not fit enough and this kind of stuff. They're going to be going on a pre-season tour to... they go into Asia or Australia. The Far East. That's going to be difficult for them as well. The last thing they want really is for a player to be signed and then join in, flying out with the squad a week into the tour and then adjusting and all this kind of stuff as they're doing all of that kind of business. They just want people in, ideally, by the start of July, right?
They do, yeah. They want them in quick, and then we need to get on with it. So this is the whole point. This is why we know stuff's going on behind the scenes, and agents have spoken out, because Manchester United need to get on with this. They need to get on with it quickly. So you just said there about pre-season. Pre-season is just round the corner. Like, I know it's the end of the campaign, and everyone's thinking it's time off. As I said to someone yesterday, you know, in our industry, we don't get any time off this time of year, generally maybe a week or two, and that's it. And you're straight back into it because the transfer window is so hot. But I think when you look at the fitness levels, Ten Hag would have absolutely already seen the reports from the medical teams. He would have seen that and seen that players are not fit. The other thing is that the eye test shows something that you don't want to see. What's that, Scott? They don't run. They're joggers. So he's not going to come in day one and say, let's build this up properly and slowly. He's going to say, get to work early and get fit. 2 weeks of proper lung-busting training, old school of running metrics and going doing the bleep test and getting doing all of the stuff with the medical team. And you need to be ready for pre-season. Pre-season is not when you start getting ready. You don't get a pre-season and then go on day one. Lads, we're in Sydney, Australia. Let's start doing some running. No, it's going to start before that. And these players that will be at the football club will all be ready, be given their plans by Ten Hag to do it away from the club. That's what happens now. They've all got gyms at home. They all live in £5 million mansions. They can start their work, you know, behind the scenes away from the cameras. Of course, all of them take pictures of it, so it's always on Instagram anyway.
True. Holidays, fitness holidays to Dubai and the likes of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Simply put, these players have got a point to prove as well. And if they don't, you'd think they know that.
Yeah.
And they really need to make an impression and try and reverse the reputation they built for themselves over the course of this season.
It's the reason why football clubs sack managers, because this is how you reboot. Because you can't sack players in general. You have to retain some of them, and you have to be able to say some new conditions, new opportunities, but you know, if you let this manager down, then we'll find ways either to get rid of you or we'll bring new players in anyway around that. So I think that's why United fans should be buoyant about this appointment, because it will be a changing of the guard. And these players have got to buy in. You know, we just talked about Marcus Rashford there, and I'm sure we'll talk about him a lot in the weeks ahead. If Marcus Rashford wants it, he needs to be better than he is at the moment. So whatever's going on behind the scenes for him, and everyone has a private life and whatnot, he needs to be on a football pitch for 90 minutes, current and present, and giving his manager goals and assists.
Yes, indeed. Let's just before we round off, the other positions, obviously, we mentioned the 2CM centre-half and a versatile forward.
Yeah.
Who are the players that you'd really want, if you could pick four from those positions?
I think looking at the two positions, centre-back and centre-forward, because I think those two positions are absolutely key now in this first stage of the rebuild, there's just some obvious names that jump out, and Manchester United are definitely inquiring about these. We know about that. So Pau Torres is the easy one, because are you going to buy a centre-back that plays on the left-hand side that allows Rafa Varane to play on the right? Now, Rafa Varane can kind of do either side. It's not really a problem. But we've seen that there's an issue with Manchester United of going from De Gea to centre-back to full-backs to central midfielders. So you need someone that can play the ball. Now, what I've heard from a lot of United fans, especially on Twitter, is that Pau Torres is a bit of a soft touch.
Soft, yeah. Have
you heard he's that soft. Point? You know, he's not, you know, we need someone who's rock hard. We need a Vidic. No, you need a ball player. That's what you need. Manchester United concede goals because they're terrible at playing the ball out from the back. And then you lose and cede possession and territory in front of you. So you need a player that can play that ball into feet and do it quick and make sure United actually become a modern football team. So I think Pau Torres is the obvious choice there. But there are other players, you know, like, you know, he's not the only centre-back in Europe. Now, talking about the centre-forward position, Darwin Nunes, obviously, there's a lot of smoke there. We know that Darwin Nunes wants to come to England. Will he come to United? Still not 100% sure. But it'd be very easy to go and get a player like Nunes, and then you can retain Ronaldo for a year, because it's then about rotation and about that player helping you in that moment on the press and being able to do the work rate and do those things. So, Scott, I'm not overly hot on individual names. Not like if you don't get him, you can't do it. It doesn't work like that. That's not how you build a good football team. But you need players that can do the function. And that's what United haven't got. You've got stars that can score goals. You've got big names, people who sell shirts. You can do all of that. And then there's a big gap. And then you've got Scott McTominay. So you need to fill that gap in the middle of workers who are actually skilled and craft on the ball. You need a Modric-type player, dare I say it, a Bernardo Silva, players that will run 12 or 13 kilometres a game, unlike this lot who run 10 kilometres a game. So you must find a way now. And I think this is not going to be difficult for Ten Hag. He's not going to be able to look at the market and go, where do I get players that can make me play 4-2-3-1 effectively? There's thousands out there. You just got to go and choose them and then make it work. You know, it's got Ruben Neves at Wolves. You know, you can go and find a player that understands the Premier League and can give you real output quickly and will play 6 and 8, will move the ball along efficiently, will support the attack, will do all sorts of things. This is why De Jong is interesting, because De Jong can do different things too.
Scott McTominay. you mentioned him there. Poor Scotty, he's been there.
Scotty will be part of it. Like people talked about positions the other day with a colleague of mine, and we talked about, you know, what do people do? And if you end up, say, moving out the centre backs, talked about Bailly, haven't we? Potentially Lindelof, Phil Jones. There's every chance that you put Scott McTominay into your stock of centre backs. Now, he wouldn't be your starting centre back. But again, it's just about options of building your squad. Now, he's not a ball player, is he? Scotty would be your smash and grab centre back. If you needed someone to go and mark Andy Carroll, you know, if Andy Carroll was a few years younger and you needed someone to give you some physicality there, you could put Scott in there. But it's about having technical players around him and not then relying on Scott McTominay to pass the ball out from the number six position. That's not a clever look, is it? So I think that's where Man United have failed in recent years. They've failed their own players as well by giving them tasks that they're not good at.
Yeah, there's no fixture for United this weekend because they've already played Chelsea, obviously, in the FA Cup final on Saturday. That fixture's already been played.
Yeah.
And no match for us to watch and despair over this weekend, which is
quite happy about that.
any final thoughts before we shoot off, Rob?
No, I just I'm just kind of glad we've got over this hump now of the Youth Cup final, which was obviously a success, and Ajax's title. Because I think, again, if Ajax had lost that title, my God, the knives would have been out.
Damaged goods coming out.
Oh my God! Like, you think about
United have cursed him already.
You think about what Pochettino goes through just because he lost a Champions League final once, and because he didn't win a few tin pots here and there and whatnot, and because he can't get on with Neymar and Messi or something or the other. You know, he gets so much flack for that, and that was a big. I think that was a sticking point for United as a board, is that they wanted to make a populist choice, but also make a choice that was a good football choice. So we're at that junction now. That's why I'm relatively calm about this, because the next few weeks is just going to be transfer crazy. We'll talk about it. Man United are going to get linked with so many players. Some of it will be true and some of it will be false. But what we'll try and do on this show is talk to you about the stuff that Ten Hag really wants, and maybe again with some of our contacts at Manchester United, whether we know who will be the next superstars of this football team.
Yeah, you can subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, Google, Spotify, etc. And now you can watch us on YouTube. Just I know I said Tuesdays and Fridays earlier in the show. Just one show for you next week on Monday, because I will be away, but with no game, really. The only thing to keep us going, really, will be Ten Hag tidbits and transfer stories galore. One show next week on Monday, so keep an eye out for that. Head over to our YouTube channel, hit the like button, subscribe as well, and join the community, leave a comment, etc., etc. And the link should be in the description of this episode if you're listening on an audio platform. And just another reminder to follow us on Twitter too, @PromisedLandMU for the show, @_Rob_B for Rob, and @_ScottSaunders for me, if you'd like to get in touch and let us know your thoughts on United, Eric Ten Hag, Frankie de Jong, etc., etc. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. Rob, thank you very much again for chatting to me for, you know, about the falterings of Manchester United and some possible better times ahead.
Wouldn't it be good if we can do that in the next few weeks and months, talk about some positive stuff at Man United? Because I think the last 12 months have been pretty dark for us.
They really have. Let's hope United have turned a corner. Let's hope they don't get battered by Crystal Palace on the final day in the Brighton mould. Let's hope they can hold on to sixth and save the embarrassment of the Conference League if West Ham is to somehow supersede them into sixth place. So let's just take stock, start again, with a new manager and a new approach. It'd be good to see, and some hopefully more successful times ahead. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.